are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking to you. Yeah, you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to The Caregivers Podcast, where you're never alone. Thank you for being here, and hopefully this podcast is giving you reason to stay and to say thank you for caring. My name is Lon Kiefer, and yes, I read this and record this for each podcast because I'm just not that organized and because I'm multitasking, because you see, I am a caregiver, and I'm also your host. And as I'm sure you know by now, I'm widely known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers. You can find us in this podcast at The Caregivers Podcast on Facebook, and over on Twitter, we are Caregivers Pod. If you want to find little old me, I'm Lon Kiefer on social media. And for those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. Our guest today is a true example of a pro per caregiver, as his professional career as a leader in senior living mashed up against his personal family caregiver role when his father became ill. And this experience profoundly changed the trajectory of not only his family life, but his professional career, as he would become perhaps our nation's leading authority of professional work-life balance for caregivers through his work, his book, and his website, Caregivers Work. Please enjoy this episode with John Paul Morosi.
John Paul Morosi, I can't thank you enough for being on the Caregivers Podcast. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. It's terrific to be here, Lon.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I start every podcast asking my guests to honor themselves before they share with others. And please let us know how we can find you. And, you know, we're going to do a long version of what you're all about, but give us a short version as we get started. So how can we find you, and why is it that you're on the Caregivers Podcast today?
Well, if you happen to live in the Denver, Colorado area, you can find me right here in Centennial, Colorado, at the Holly Creek Life Plan community. But for everybody else, yeah, I'm the author of a new book, as you know, called Caregivers Work, a six-step guide to balancing work and family. And I've established a brand new website, caregiverswork.com. And my vision is to use the book as a way to build a conversation with people across a spectrum of backgrounds to up the quality of life of people who are trying to balance, hold you down a job, take care of mom or dad or another loved one. So caregiverswork.com is where to find me, and it's all about working together to make the societal changes we need to make so that caregivers can enjoy a better quality of life. What I'm about.
Well, I thank you for that. I say this at the end. Thank you for caring. I'll say it at the beginning here. I thank you for what you're doing and what your book is all about, and for the whole idea behind it. And I want to applaud you, congratulate you on, from a branding perspective, I love Caregivers Work. It's simple, it's understandable, it's digestible, and it is a huge challenge out there in the greater world. The folks that find themselves being thrust, or even if they choose to accept it, in the role of a caregiver are usually still of a working age and often still raising children. And it's $1 billion of a challenge within the industry itself. But let's focus on the individual as we go forward. Why do you have such an interest in this?
Well, I guess it's, as you know, with so many things in life, it grew out of my own personal experience. I had the good fortune to have some terrific mentors in college and my first jobs. And then my dad took sick. And I was in a position in home care where I was responsible for the trade association in the state of New Jersey. And I was amazed that even though I had been working in the field of home care 15 years, when my dad took ill and I had to jump on that New Jersey Turnpike and do an hour and a half each way to arrange care for him, it was really, really overwhelming. And I thought, well, that's up for me. And I've been working in home care for 15 years. What's it like for the average person who doesn't know Medicare from Medicaid or their way through the housing and elder support networks? So it seemed like a big gap in information, and that's what motivated me to put a little simple book together that people could use to solve their own problems when it came down to holding down a job to take care of mom or dad.
It's an amazing perspective when it comes home to roost, so to speak. I know in my own personal life, as family members ask me questions, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really don't know. I mean, I'm wearing the same hat, but with a different head. If you would follow that analogy, I mean, you know, now I'm thinking of this as a personal family caregiver and not as a professional caregiver. And you frequently don't have the answers. One of the guests on the podcast a couple of episodes back was a neurologist out of Alabama by the name of Daniel C. Potts. And we joked about the fact that, you know, he had, what do you have by the time you're a practicing neurologist? 10, 12 years of formal training. And from a practical sense, it just is almost not helpful at first. You almost have to divorce yourself from that thought to come back at it from another approach. And what you're doing with your book is your book actually, I mean, it says it's a guide. I mean, it's like a workbook for how to prepare for this.
You know, it was my whole goal is to break it down into bite-sized pieces because it can really be overwhelming, especially if, you know, if it comes about through a crisis in your life. Suddenly, you know, mom or dad's doing great. Next thing you know, somebody has a stroke. They're in a hospital. You're interacting with all these bureaucracies with their own sets of rules. And meanwhile, you know, all those things that you saw listed in the employee handbook a couple of years ago that looked theoretical or hypothetical suddenly become really important, like whether or not there's flex time and what's covered and not covered in terms of your EAP, other kinds of supports that you never really thought that you personally would ever be using.
Yeah. I know that as I'm getting to a certain age and in the profession that I've been in, you know, I'm seeing some of the people that I've served more as peers than as patients or residents or family members. And it really has changed the way I think and approach. I think it's made me a better leader. I think it's made me a better man. I know I don't want to talk too much about branding or philosophy, but within the Defender of Caregivers, I have a heart that has two bands around it. And that heart stands for the inside of awareness. The next band is acceptance, and the outer band is allowance. And the idea behind this is be aware of what's really going on, you know, accept that things are going to have to change, and find a way to either let people within that outer band or you get outside of that outer band and you allow yourself to be part of a bigger, I don't know what the word would be there, phenomenon where you have help and you're not alone. And for a lot of people, that's their employer has a role in that. But a lot of the people that are facing this don't even tell their employers what they're facing.
Yeah, there's no way you can cope effectively if you don't confide in somebody. And I love the AAA, be aware, accept, and allow. It's terrific.
Yeah.
And so if we're not even aware that we're caregivers, how are we going to be able to tackle the problems that we're facing? And I have a little section in the book which actually allows us to ask ourselves a series of questions to assess what the level of trust is with our manager or our supervisor. Because we also have to be realistic as caregivers. Now, right now, not everybody, but a lot of people are living in labor markets where unemployment is very low. So the demand to find good workers, employees, and keep them is very strong on the part of employers. It wasn't always like that. You and I have been advocating for caregivers for many years, and we've seen the economy take dips and head on up to the peaks. And right now, I saw a Wall Street Journal article that says that unemployment is at a 50-year low in the United States. So we don't know how long something like that will last. But right now, employers are certainly, just because of the reality of their day-to-day challenges, more receptive to helping you, the caregiver, me, the caregiver, find that balance, because they don't want to lose us. They want to keep good employees. It's very expensive to replace us. So, you know, those of us who are in this position right now, and I got an uncle, I got a long-distance caregiving situation with an uncle on the other side of the country, and my 92-year-old mother-in-law lives with us. I'm living it, and I know what some of the challenges are. And, you know, starting with assessing the trust between yourself and your manager, your supervisor, is a really important place.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting the perspective you come at this. I call it PROPER, professional caregiver, personal family caregiver, and trying to forge PROPER, proper, however you want to say it, relationships. You come at it from both angles through your personal experience. You went through this with your dad. You also lead and manage a caring healthcare, senior living, retirement community type of an environment. And one of the things that I've always seen and tried to work with people on that's a challenge from the professional side of that is that we sort of early adopt this rigid approach to things because of an abundance of caution and concern for the commitment we have for the people we care for. We tend to get with inside very preordained, structured, rigid boxes, and it limits our ability to serve the people that we're serving because it limits our ability to retain the people that help serve them. So I applaud your book from a standpoint of encouraging people to talk to their employer and encouraging employers to listen.
We got a lot of work to do, but remember, there are a lot of people who are managers, CEOs, other C-suite folks that are experiencing caregiving as well. So if we do have some of those business owners and executives listening in, I cannot overemphasize how important it is for a leader in an organization, whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit, to talk about the caregiving that they might be involved in and to walk the talk. Because if the senior leadership is that you can put all the greatest mission statements and lists of values up on the wall that you want, but we all know that if the CEO, the CFO, and others in the C-suite are not walking the talk, there is not a comfort level on the part of the middle managers to give the employees the flexibility they need. And that's the number one thing. You know, as an employed family caregiver, you need some flexibility to come in and out of work, sometimes a little bit early, sometimes a little bit late, to get a couple of days off here and there, to do what you have to do without the fear that you're going to lose your job, there are going to be negative repercussions for, you know, taking the steps you need to take to find that balance. So C-suite people, listen up, walk the talk.
I so to dip into caregiver personality stuff, Myers-Briggs, wherever you want to take this from, caregivers, I tell everybody to focus everything on assuming that you're dealing with a caregiver personality, whether it is from an employer-employee standpoint or even if it's in a sales marketing standpoint. The decision maker for a loved one, the influencer, whatever you want to refer to them as, is very likely to have a caregiver personality, either because they've stepped into the role, maybe not voluntarily, but when someone in the family needs to step into the role, these type of personalities step up, or if it is thrust upon them and they're not born to it from birth, nature, they're born with an E by accepting a burden or responsibility. And by making decisions that benefit others first, they start to morph into that personality of a caregiver. And either way, this can be a very positive type of personality if they believe in the organization that they're part of. If they believe that the organization is just paying lip service to these things and the CEO is not walking the walk or their middle manager leader is not walking the walk, they can be a very dangerous personality because they believe very much in the ends justify the means. I'm doing the right thing, so how I do it does not matter. So this walk the walk thing is very crucial. And not that you're calling anybody out, but I really appreciate that you're putting it out there for them to hear. And this is from a man that's been in an industry, this industry for quite a long time.
Well, I had the good fortune to meet the CEO of a very large corporation. It's actually the largest food service corporation in the United States. And I don't know even how he got onto the topic of caregiving, but turns out he wrote a little book about his, he and his wife's experience of caring for their daughter who had, was severely physically disabled. And when I told him about my book, as soon as he got off the phone, he went on Amazon and bought a copy of it for every single manager and supervisor within his company and made it a priority to talk about caregiving at the next the regional management meetings. So he was when I put the tool in his hands, he was ready to go with it. So he was looking for a way to make this more practical, to make it more real for his managers and supervisors. And so I guess what I'm saying is there are probably more people out there than we realize are in these leadership positions that are going through these challenges, and maybe they just have not had the tools at their disposal or the opportunity to open up the conversation. This is all about relationships and conversations.
Yeah. Well, that's a very exciting experience that you had there, and a very real, tangible sort of proof of concept experience as well. As you said earlier, the caregiving experience is it's not an isolated thing. It is way more broad than any of us probably realize. And to give you another compliment in your book, I notice, you know, one of the things I've always struggled with is I have this creative side of me, and I try and come at things humorously or creatively, and it can confuse the message at times, and this is meant to be a compliment. Your book is very simple. It's very practical. It's right to the point. It is a working guide. It's not something you read just to be entertained. You read it to be informed and to learn. And you call out statistics and sources from the Family Caregiver Alliance, which is a group that I really like to utilize as well, because they're not tied to any kind of a ulterior motive other than to get great data out there.
Yes, it's a great group, Family Caregiver Alliance. It's solid information, solid research that you can rely upon. And so especially for those who are trying to build programs, it's a great online resource. You know, as you were talking about the simplicity of the book, I have to give a shout out to, you know, old friend and colleague who I learned a lot from, Suzanne Geffen-Mintz, the founder of the National Family Caregivers Association, which is now called the Caregiver Action Network. I had the good fortune to work with Suzanne earlier in my career, and that gave me the opportunity to speak with caregivers all around the United States. We had a federally funded grant that allowed us to go out and teach certain ways of interacting with healthcare professionals to be more effective. And as I listened to folks, the feedback I was hearing is that most books that are written for caregivers are well-intended, but they're too fat.
Yeah.
Caregivers, they're not simple enough, and caregivers, when they're in it, don't have the time and energy to plow through a lot of extraneous information. They want to be able to grab what they need when they need it, make use of it, and come back later if they need something again. And, you know, actually, the Internet's got a lot of great information on it, but the quantity of the information is overwhelming, and the reliability of the filters that we go through to sift through, you know, what's strictly a sales pitch and what's really going to be helpful to me as a caregiver still remains a challenge for people. So that's why I wrote the book in a really simple format. I think it runs just about 100 pages. I wanted to keep it under 100. And a lot of 800 numbers, a lot of links that you can just click on to get more information. And people can know they can trust in the fact that there's a caregiver that's been at this now. My gosh, I hate to even think of how many years. I've been balancing elder care and work. So I personally, with the assistance of some really smart people, sifted down the resources section, the caregiving A to Z resources section, to just give people the absolute best, most trustworthy places to go to get the information they need.
Yeah, and thank you for that. I speak a lot privately and publicly about some of my concerns about the internet, and there's a tremendous amount of resources there, but a lot of them are, you know, simply funnels into somebody's messaging or sales process, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just that a lot of times the visitor or the consumer is not really even aware that that's what they're a part of. And I've checked the vast majority of, you know, the links and things that you shared, and it really is just good, pure information that's untethered by any of those techniques that are out there. And you know, a lot of my first exposure to people out there and indirectly to you is through Facebook relationships that I developed years ago when I first started Defender of Caregivers. And Facebook has dramatically changed. It's no longer an open, honest exchange. It also now is something that is squelched if you don't pay for it. It's tough to find a place for good, safe information. So thank you again for sharing that through your book, Caregivers Work.
Well, it's been quite a journey. And your observation about how social media has changed is a really good one, Lon. Facebook used to be some place where maybe you could, you know, get some practical advice and not just feel bombarded by ads and strong opinions on one thing or another. So it's a challenge. I guess a question for all of us that are doing this work is, how do we as caregivers come together as a community? How does that happen?
Yeah. I don't have a great answer for it. Hopefully this podcast is and will be one of those mechanisms in learning of people like yourself and your work and your resources that you're sharing, because you gave me a softball question and I'm not handling it very well. Because, you know, none of us control that world. I'll give you a sidebar. It's funny. I really rely on people to rate the podcast, share the podcast. I had somebody rate the podcast earlier. I think it was after the Daniel C. Potts episode, saying this is a wonderful resource. I wish I'd had it years ago. I love the host's sense of humor, but I wish the host would talk a little bit less. it's always in the back of my mind how to do that. But
something you said a moment ago was very, very true and very powerful, Lon. The existence of this podcast is a way of bringing community together. You are providing this is a really important public service that you provide by creating this platform for this type of conversation to happen. And sometimes we as Americans have to step back and take a look at the society that we're living in. And here's a big change. Here's a big difference between the United States of America and every other industrialized country. I've traveled to Europe, traveled to Canada, and the basic infrastructure to support caregivers does not exist in the United States.
No.
If you go up to Montreal, Canada, take a look around this province of Quebec, entire province, almost neighborhood by neighborhood, is divided up into what they call CLSCs, which are, they're both basically healthcare and social support service centers that exist for every neighborhood. And so it's the integration of the social supports and the medical supports are all in one spot, easy to find, very low or no cost for not only medical care, but for long-term care. And if you're a caregiver, you can get out of the subway in Montreal, walk over to the CLSC, see somebody who can appreciate what caregivers go through, and immediately gain access to the home care help that you might need, and just the amount that you need it in order to maintain your job. This simply does not exist in the United States of America. It does exist in most, in just about every Western European country. I've experienced it in a couple of them directly. I haven't been to them all. But this one, when I'm talking about coming together as a community, I'm 68 years old. I'm not ashamed to say what my age is. I was at Woodstock. I experienced what it meant for people to look out for each other and to exist, at least for a short period of time, as a community of caring. And we got a long way to go in the United States to actually function on a day-to-day basis as a community of caring.
Yeah. I say not because I'm trying to think of what to say. I say because I'm trying to think of what not to say. You just sent me in 4 million directions. The first one would be, you know, thank you for calling this a public service. I really have come to feel it that way. On a personal note, I have spent periods of my career speaking and consulting and making my living primarily that way, and I've spent periods of my career working traditionally in the senior living elder care marketplace, and I no longer feel comfortable exclusively in any one of those areas. When I hear myself, whether it's be on this podcast or elsewhere, like, I do not seek profit any longer, you know, other than being hired to privately speak or consult. Like, I almost don't want to sell my books. I almost don't. I mean, when I am just speaking, I feel like I'm an imposter because I'm no longer leading in the industry. And when I am just leading, I feel as though I am, not fully liberated because I'm not sharing the message with the world. And it is a constant challenge to figure out the right path for this. But this podcast has come to mean so much to me because of the people that I've spoken with, and you're one of them. And another thing, you said you're not afraid to say your age. I'm 57 in about a week or 2 weeks, and just got married after being single for a long time. And I am on a journey myself to figure out what's the right way to go. And there's moments where I'm like, oh, my career's coming to an end. And then I listen to a vibrant person like you that is serving in both of those capacities, as a servant to caregivers of the world and as a leader in the industry. And you're 10 years my senior, and I thank you for being that example.
It's all about what's happening right now, where you are now, how you're working with people in the present moment. I think that there's infinite opportunity for improvement, certainly, but we can't do it alone. You know, I'm glad that there's a forum like this where people can start to realize that by working together, we can get a lot more done. We can't operate strictly in isolation. So my website is creating a forum for this exact purpose. We're just setting up these forums for people who either are HR professionals or caregivers, no matter what kind of job you do or what kind of business you run. It's a place for people to come, share ideas, share challenges, and share policies and practices that are working or not working in the workplace, with the hope that over time we will create a network of people who are committed and passionate about improving the circumstances for people holding down a job and taking care of mom or dad or a disabled child. So check it out, caregiverswork.com. Add your voice. We need people to begin to not only speak up, but to work together and share ideas and strategies together in order to move things forward. It doesn't all happen individually. Not just a matter of you or me trying to find a balance for us as individuals. It's a matter of collectively beginning to make the societal changes we need to make to honor this kind of service to our family members and our loved ones in a society that does not always fully honor that service.
Yeah, I thank you for coming back to that, because we had talked about, you know, where do you go? What do you do? And I think that what you really do, as you're out there trying to get answers, is you spend enough time to properly vet any source. And then once you get, you know, once they have earned your trust, then you sign on, so to speak. You become a part of that mission and that message. And there are places out there, such as your website, to do that. Now, one of the things that I talk about a lot in the industry is accommodation, accommodating your workforce. The industry worries about setting precedents. If I do this for one person, I'm going to have to do it for another. And what I try and share with them is to think at a higher level, that the precedent you're setting is that you are an accommodating employer and that you meet the mission of your organization for the people you serve through that accommodation. And, you know, I have a whole like 10 minute segment that I do in that from the stage. But the biggest part of being able to accommodate an employer is for it to start with communication. And, you know, your book, again, you want to take me, I'm throwing you a curve here to take you specifically to the book. I'm trying to remember where the section was where you start gauging the trust. And,
Well, you know, the six steps are to assess your situation, which includes what's going on with your caregiving situation, what's going on at work. And that means assessing the trust level between yourself and your manager or supervisor. Then learning about resources in the workplace as well as in the community. And then weighing your options. This little book makes, through simple checklists and forms, makes it possible to weigh your options. It's usually, you have more options than you realize for how to handle a situation. And then moves on to implementing the plan, monitoring for changes, and adjusting the plan. But it all starts with the assessment of what's going on at work and what's going on with the caregiving situation. So, the broader perspective that you were just alluding to, Harvard Business School had a watershed report that came out just this past February called The Caring Company, where they, you know, all the data is there. Making an investment in care, in supporting caregivers, pays big dividends to companies in terms of strategic advantage in a tight labor market. So from a managerial or policy perspective, the data's been there for years. And so it's really a matter now of taking action. And that's where this little book comes in, because it can be useful for the manager and business owner as well as to the caregiver. And, you know, the community resources are much more available today than they were when I got started in this as a caregiver. Today there's a lot more home care out there. There's a lot more adult day health services and different kinds of options. So it's just a matter of being able to have the time to sort out what's right for you and create your own plan.
Well, and making it a conscious plan is such a shift from it being an emotional plan and getting caught up in what's going, the emotion of what you're going through. It's very hard to step outside of that, but committing to making it be a plan is a huge piece. I'm going to go over to caregiver distortions in a second here. I always touch on those on the podcast, but one other point I'd like to make about your six steps to caregiving and work balance is that, you know, if we had co-written this book, assess your situation, learn about resources would be my awareness phase. And then as you go into weigh the options, implement your plan, that's acceptance when you start making the change. And then we go right on into allowance, because the overall theme in your book is that, you know, don't be alone on this. There's resources that you should avail yourself of as you go forward on this path. So I talk about caregiver distortions all the time. Now, are you familiar with how I use that term? I'm putting you on the spot there.
Yeah, I am. As a matter of fact, I've taken the time to look at your materials, and this one, really helpful, powerful handout that you prepared with the caregiver distortions, because it's so easy for any of us to fall into these kind of traps.
Oh, and they are
going
traps.
About our caregiver responsibilities, whether it's labeling, mislabeling, personalizing things, jumping to conclusions, and just being able to see this list you've prepared of the 10 most common caregiver distortions immediately gave me some perspective and said, maybe there's a healthier perspective I can be bringing to a situation that I'm coping with.
Yeah. I wish I came up with these. I sort of stole them from Dr. David Burns in his book, The Feeling Good Handbook. And I'd like to reach out to my personal physician, Curtis Smith. If you want to go back on the podcast and listen to the it's weird how these things work. It's the first episode ever, and it's Paula Sangalier, who was so gracious enough to actually be the host on the first podcast so I could get my story out there as to how I came to know of all these. But they're very powerful, and I go back to professional and personal. Whenever something's going on in my life as a leader where I'm taking what you want to call the perks of being responsible 24/7 and having the stress of an industry with high expectations, whether they be financial or personal, whenever I take one of those perks, whether it's leaving early, coming in late, taking a long lunch, I try and remind myself, this is something that I am getting and I am taking right now, and how, when my people come to me with the same request, can I honor that? And the other piece is that I try and recognize when I am slipping down one of these paths of distortion, become aware of which one it is and how can I accept a change out of it and who can help me. I mean, it really... don't want to just preach my own stuff, but it's very grounding. And that, again, is what I like about the guide portion of your book. It's making it a plan. It's making it something you try and get out of these distortions and pay attention to.
Well, you know, distortions are important to be aware of. And then when you get the clarity that you need, you can start to do a plan. And an awful lot of people today are dealing with these caregiving situations on a long-distance basis, especially with elders. And I have a whole section in the book on a long-distance caregiving. Basically, we have two options. We can either try to do it all long-distance by internet or telephone, or we can engage a care manager, a professional care manager, who can be our eyes and ears with the older person who lives 500, 1,000, 1,500 miles away, and help us to put the picture together in the local area in a way that we could never do because we're just not that close to local resources. So I guess what I'm getting at is, yeah, we have these distortions, and then we have complications, depending on our given circumstances, and we might have the problem right here at our doorstep, or we might be dealing with it on the other side of the country.
Well, what your book does when it does the A to Z resources is we're not where the European countries or Canada might be with some of this, but the private sector is trying to come up with solutions. They're not, just the at home or somewhere else kind of option that perhaps once existed and is prejudged. There's a lot of intermediary steps, and there's a lot of places to find help, and there's a lot of private people that have been through the kind of experience that you've been through that are committing themselves in a cottage industry way to help serve in that capacity.
Well, it all starts with gaining enough centeredness and perspective to create a plan. Otherwise, it's very easy through the caregiver distortions and the stresses that we're feeling to lose perspective and not have a path forward. So I commend you for this podcast, but I also think that we've got to make it easier for people through the practices of our HR professionals and others in the workplace to open those doors and make it a little bit easier for the average caregiver.
So do you want to take a crack at coming up with a "you might be a caregiver if" statement? This is a challenge I throw out to, I know in my life, on Facebook some time ago, I took a picture of my doc mobile, which is a Sprinter van with an 8-foot bear on the side of it. Try explaining that to somebody. And it was stuck in the mud in my backyard. And the reason for that is because I used it as a truck to pull a trailer full of mulch down in a wet, boggy area. And it was because of this. You might be a caregiver if you loan your truck to a neighbor because he needed it, and then you didn't have it available for yourself when you needed it. You know, caregivers, whether it's by nature or nurture, learn to serve others, and they frequently put more pressure on themselves through that without even recognizing it. So do you want to take a stab at either a serious or a humorous "you might be a caregiver if" statement that might talk about your own journey?
Well, I guess you're a caregiver if you always have a plan B. So you're planning to have your night out with your loved one, or you're going to get away to the mountains for the weekend. But because you're a caregiver, you got that plan B in the back of your head. What's plan B going to be if things fall apart at that particular moment? You got to jump back in. So for me, if you're a caregiver, if you got a plan B.
Yeah, and that plan B comes from an actual plan that you commit to making and being ready to implement, and it involves others and resources, and some of the way that you can find out about some of them is through your website at Caregivers Work, and through your book, and I thank you for being on this podcast and being an inspiration for me personally and professionally, but creating what you've created. And I want to give you a minute to tell folks again where they can find you. And
Well, the book is called Caregivers Work, A Six-Step Guide to Balancing Work and Family, Elder Care Edition. You can get it on Amazon.com, or you can purchase it on my website, caregiverswork.com. And, of course, that's also the place where you can enter into dialogue with others through the different forums that we are establishing on the website. So I guess my parting thought would be just know that it is possible. It is possible to find that balance between caregiving and work, and the starting point is to find that center for yourself. And the beginning point is self-care and becoming aware of resources. If you've got those two things, you're on the right path to finding balance.
This is a great resource. I'm holding it in my hand as we speak. It's got a endorsement by Senator Bill Bradley on the cover, somebody that I admire greatly. I've really enjoyed this. I've enjoyed getting to know you prior to this, and hope to continue to develop that relationship. John Paul Marazzi, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
Always good talking with you, Lon. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, folks, thanks for being here for another episode of the podcast. I know this episode was a personal inspiration in that it showed me that I can continue to have an impact as a caregiver advocate much further into my own journey than I sometimes think when I'm thinking negatively. They say that comparison is the thief of joy, so I would propose that perspective is the chief of joy. Might be a little cheeky, but in my mind, the difference between comparison and perspective is approaching things from a rational rather than emotional or distorted manner. And I thank John Paul Marazzi for a healthy dose of perspective and for his resources to the world through his work at Caregivers Work. Thanks again for listening. Please leave us a 5-star review. Let us know what you think, but most importantly, share this with others that could benefit from these caregiver stories and the Caregivers Podcast. Okay, everyone, go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.